I'm Dr. Howie Jacobson, and this is the Plant Yourself Podcast. Each week, I bring you a conversation with someone who's making a positive difference in the world. And for my day job, I help leaders and their teams master their mindsets so they can achieve great things. To find out more, check out the Mindset Mastery Memo, my Substack newsletter. You can find it at plantyourself.com/memo. And now, today's show. I'm Dr. Howie Jacobson, and this is the Plant Yourself Podcast. Each week, I bring you a conversation with someone who's making a positive difference in the world. And for my day job, I help leaders and their teams master their mindsets so they can achieve great things. To find out more, check out the Mindset Mastery Memo, my Substack newsletter. You can find it at plantyourself.com/memo. And now, today's show.
Hey, this is Howard Jacobson, and I'm thrilled, I tell you, to be joined on the phone today by Emily Nolan Joseph. Hello, Emily.
Hi, how are you?
Oh, I'm jumping up and down here. It's a good thing it's not a video call.
I'm thrilled too.
I'm doing my best imitation of a Jack Russell here, so I'm really excited to have this call. And hopefully, quite soon, folks will know why. So, you and I met a little over a year ago at a vegan blogging conference. We were sitting at the same table and started chatting, and I was just utterly fascinated by your story, your outlook, and the work you do in the world. So why don't we start with, like, what you do, who you are, just the 30-second elevator speech so that we can orient folks.
Yeah, so I'm Emily Nolan, and I have a blog that is Inspiration for Kind People, and the name is mykindoflife.com, and that started as an outlet for me as a plus-size model to really have a voice for first the vegan community, and then it expanded into more of a compassion-based lifestyle community. And recently it kind of took off and started getting sponsors, namely Lululemon and Kind Snacks and a lot of companies that are interested in my message of health and wellness coming from a plus-size model. And I started a nonprofit called Topless, which is a body empowerment event through radical honesty. And it's a sports bra event. A lot of people are always confused, and it's shirtless for men. But the idea came from once you expose your vulnerabilities, and a lot of times it's body image ideas of we're not allowed to have stretch marks or a soft stomach or maybe we're too thin or whatever it is, and you expose it, you realize everyone has something going on. And so all of a sudden you can look past these stories and start to really have these human conversations again. And so the idea started, and then I just launched my first official Topless event. I've been having small ones, but we had a huge one in San Francisco, and it was so amazing. We sold out in a day. It was such an amazing event, and it was based around yoga. And the event can be, you know, all different types of events. We've had a topless wine tasting and really fun, exciting stuff. But yoga seems to be a great vehicle for shedding these body image labels. That's what I'm working on. And I have another product I'm working on that is yoga involved. And I'm starting my yoga teacher training this weekend. So I have all this stuff on my plate.
Wow.
Yeah.
So one of the things that makes you such a great advocate for the things you care about is your own story. And if we just look at sort of the top line, the resume stuff, talk about radical honesty. If, you know, all of us, to some extent, try to present ourselves in a good light. Your resume is effing amazing. Right? You trained for the Olympics. You're internationally renowned model, and you say plus size, but you weren't always plus size. Right? You didn't always have an adjective in front of model. You went to UNC Business School. Like you're a your top line achievements are impressive and they're deserved and they get people's attention. But what really strikes me is the interstitial lows, the things that most people would never admit publicly that you are extremely open about. So could you give us a little bit of your trajectory?
Certainly. Yeah, so you've highlighted my highs pretty well, thank you. And you've made me feel great. My the adversity I've been through in life, I think a lot of people have been through. So for a long time, I was afraid to be honest about it. And then I hit kind of this very spiritual point in my life where things changed and I decided to open up with radical honesty, not knowing what would come from it, but I started being open about having 10 years of eating disorders. I had female athlete triad training for the U.S. Olympics, and that was several years. And that's
What is that, female athlete triad?
Female athlete triad is basically when a woman is going through puberty and she loses her period and she gets osteoporosis, gains eating disorders, and then develops something called body dysmorphic disorder. And consequently, I had something called body dysmorphic disorder, which is a fairly new disorder, but it's very common. It's where you never think you're good enough and in terms of body image. So I would travel the world being on the cover of magazines, and I never thought I was good enough, and I was, being paid for the way that I looked. But, I always wanted to change something and be different or be thinner, which was usually my goal. And trying to, juice cleanse or diet or whatever it is that I could, starve myself again, whatever, to look the way that I thought I should look instead of feeling worthy the way that I was meant to be. And
can I jump in and ask a question about that?
Sure.
Seems I know when you describe body dysmorphic disorder, I'm racking my brain to think of women who don't suffer from it.
And there's a lot of men that privately message me, but yeah, it's like every woman. I wouldn't even say suffers because it's so common that it's just the way that we're hardwired to be now, and we really need to unlearn the stupid things that we have learned. We're spending.
Yeah.
When I stopped and I looked back in my history of what I would think about during the day, how many times I thought about my body was sick. Whether it was in the mirror and looking at myself, or an outfit change that you change 5 times because you're not appealing enough, and all these little things that I truly, the deepest part of me doesn't believe that we were put on this earth to think about. I was thinking about them for the majority of the day. The majority of my waking hours, I was always, even when I was working, as a model, you're always thinking about your body image. And then you start living this label that you have to live up to, being this size and being this skin color and being this hair length and being all these little things that become who you are, when really it's not who I am, it's what I do in this period of my life.
Yeah. So what I was thinking is that for a lot of women, it's, these thoughts can be, sort of like sleigh drivers, constantly affecting, every aspect of their thoughts, of their lives. But there's a sense in which they might at some point realize that these thoughts are unhelpful. I'm wondering, for you as a model, did you have an excuse? Were you able to rationalize them to say, well, this is my paycheck. If I gain a pound here, my career could be threatened. Was it easier for you to hide behind a rational approach to body dysmorphic disorder because of your profession?
Well, I will tell you, you go into your agency, and I've had instances where they've asked me to strip down into my underwear after Thanksgiving, and they're saying, okay, you're a little soft here, you need to work out. And so those little things is like, they're not going to push me to clients because they don't think I'm fit enough. therefore I need to be a size 14, which in plus size modeling, that's these last several years, that's been like the number one size for booking jobs. And how are you supposed to be something that, you know, maybe the universe hasn't intended you to be? And so for a long time, I hid behind what you were saying is, you know, people having an idea of what I'm supposed to be. And I made excuses for that, whether it was like starving myself, obsessively working out, being a raw vegan, which isn't a terrible thing, but it certainly it hurt my social life, because I would say no to going out, and I would like constantly focus on my food, which maybe if I had cancer would be an amazing thing, but I didn't. You know, I was like 20 years old and trying to be a model and travel the world. And then something funny happened when I finally gave up this, like, trying to hold on to these excuses. And I was just saying, like, you know, I'm just going to be free. I don't need to model anymore, because I have this amazing blog going on, and I have a couple other business models I'm working on that I know will succeed. You know, I'm just going to, like, relax into my fear all of a sudden. And all of a sudden I started booking all the top jobs, and people wanted me more, and my rate went up. And it was just really amazing that, you know, when you finally, Danielle Laporta, who does the Firestarter series, and she's written a bunch of different spiritual books, but she talks about, instead of thinking about like how you want things to happen, you have to feel that way. And it's really true. And it's hard to teach someone that until they actually do it. But for me, it's like feeling that relaxing into my fear made me a lot happier and more successful as a model. And I think also as a role model for people to say, wow, this girl is really putting herself out there, and I feel like I can too now. You know, I can come out about what I've been struggling with and take my anxiety from a 10 to a 2, you know, when you publicly admit it.
Right. Have you heard from other models, maybe, you know, sort of sitting in the green room before shoots or just, you know, via email, that you've said, you've named their experience, but they were never able to speak it, and they thought they were crazy? Like, have you been a validating force for people?
I have gotten a lot of support through the modeling community in social media, and people, my friends sharing my story. And I think maybe it's not their, what makes them tick and light up, but they certainly are moved by it. You know, we all have our own things. Like for you, it might be, you know, food and vegetables and really getting that healthy diet. And for me, it's just body empowerment. So I found a lot of my supporters, they just come from everywhere. It's not just models. And I don't really see myself as a model. I just, even though I guess I am, it's different. I used to label myself as a model, and now I don't live by any label anymore, because, you know, tomorrow if my body was disfigured, you know, I would still be just as brilliant as the universe has allowed me to be, but I would look different. So, but yeah, I do get support. I don't know if I've heard a lot from private stories of models, because a lot of the models I work with are they seem to be healthy just the way that they are.
That's good to know.
Yeah.
I was just thinking when you said, you know, we all have our thing. Like for me, it's food and nutrition, and that's absolutely true. Like I really work hard to teach people about a healthy diet. And when I'm on stage lecturing, you know, about science and politics and stuff like that, I can do that and really focus on that kind of at arm's length. But when I work with people one-on-one, I've got to tell you that the main thing I'm working with is body dysmorphic disorder, or people hate their bodies. And I, you know, when you see earlier when I asked you about women, you said, well, a lot of men have it too. So, you know, I would be maybe what I considered 5 or 10 pounds overweight. I'd have a little stomach punch. I didn't have the 6-pack or the, you know, ideally the 12-pack. I'd step out of the shower, and I'd look at myself in the mirror, and I would tell myself what I was going to eat that day. And the way I would address myself is, "You fat slob." It occurred to me, and you know, no one ever, like, this wasn't me going in public and getting looks, or, you know, people fearing that I was going to sit next to them on airplanes. This was entirely in my own head, and yet it was so powerful that, you know, I totally get that men have this too. And when I work with anyone around food, ultimately it comes down to, are you doing this to punish yourself, or are you doing it to reward yourself? And if you, if your subtext is "you fat slob," there is no way you will ever be successful in changing the way you eat.
Yeah, for sure. And I think just by focusing on the way you feel and not the way you look, will change the way you look, but you really genuinely have to be focused on eating to feel amazing, you know, eating to feel right, eating for energy, eating for compassion, whatever you choose to be, you know, the reason. But yeah, when you focus on, you know, for me, it's like our body is never us, because if you look at my body 10 years ago, I didn't look the way I look now. And then if you look at my body 20 years ago, I definitely didn't look the way I did now. So really, our body's just our vehicle, and we're not a beauty equation. You know, this is just our birth suit, our vehicle to move through life. And who made the beauty rules anyway? Like, who cares about 5 pounds on your stomach? You're awesome. You know, look at your statement to the world. You're writing these amazing books and talking about life-changing ideas of nutrition and health. You're amazing.
Yeah, thank you. And I agree. And part of me was going, you got to lose those 5 pounds or people will discover you're a fraud.
Oh, yeah. We all have that thought. For one of my topless events, my guest yoga instructor had a photo shoot that day, and she chose to teach the topless event because she said every time she has a photo shoot, she has to, like, starve herself and dehydrate herself and try to look thin because she's a yoga instructor, and every yoga instructor needs to be, like, a ballerina thin. Mm-hmm. And she just started laughing. She said, yeah, and then I had this opportunity to teach a body empowerment class, and of course I was going to take that opportunity. But, yeah, you know, I think even by you admitting the fact that you have 5 pounds and maybe people will think you're a fraud, it's so honest and it's so real. You know, people – and you're not the only one that feels that way.
Oh no, I think it's universal.
Yeah, totally.
You know, for me, whatever I say I'm working on, the basis is, I think, what you describe as radical honesty, which is, can you feel everything you're feeling? And forget about your body, can your spirit be a big enough container to tolerate all the shit that's going on inside your head?
Right.
And, you know, because, you know, the minute, like, I've never seen anyone be radically honest and you know, get real vulnerable and in the right context not get support and not allow other people to then drop their own pretenses and say, "Ooh, you know what, we're all in this big hot mess together." And we can stop pretending. We can stop peddling furiously to stay in place.
For sure. Absolutely. And, you know, it takes that thought of, like, when we are all in it together, you start to realize it's just a one big waste of time that we've been so focused on something that is always going to change. you know, and the one thing that's not going to change is our spirit. So I know it sounds funny, but Beyonce has that song Pretty Hurts, and she said it's the soul that needs the surgery. You know, it's like it's inside that you need to constantly be working on. It's not the body, because we're always changing.
Right. So one question I have for you is, in many ways, your story throws a bunch of wrenches into a lot of the narratives, the convenient cultural narratives around food and fitness and health. So, for example, in the, you know, the plant-based or vegan community, there's a lot of debate with, like, the paleo doctors. And one of the ways in which we try to score points in the plant-based community is to point out that the paleo doctors are all fat, right? While our doctors are all, you know, stick skinny and spry and doing somersaults on stage in their 80s. And to some extent, there is, you know, you don't want to go to a doctor who's, you know, morbidly obese and smoking and has halitosis and all that. But there is a lot of what I would consider fat shaming in the plant-based community. How do you navigate advocating for, you know, for a healthy diet without telling people that, you know, they have to be a certain look and size for them to know that it's working?
Right. I'll tell you a story. My brother, when I started Topless, my body empowerment event, he asked me how I would speak to someone that was considered obese and how I would suggest to them what my suggestion would be for their first step on becoming healthy. And I told him radical honesty. And once you can see your body and be honest with what's going on inside of it, whether it's cancer, whether it's just extra weight, diabetes, heart disease, whatever you have going on, and you admit to yourself, this is my vehicle, this is what's going on, and now I'm going to adopt something that's going to make me feel better and ultimately change the direction I'm headed in. And that's really where I would start, you know, in trying to teach people, whether they're super thin and have an eating disorder, whether they're a size 10 and have an eating disorder, because you certainly don't need to be thin to have one, or a body image disorder, or whether you're obese, it's really just being honest about your vehicle, your earth suit, and starting that journey towards health.
That's I love the way you talk about the body, both as something very intimate and also something very impersonal. Like it's, mm-hmm. you know, it's a bunch of clothes that you put on.
And it is.
It doesn't have to be, you don't have to identify with it in the same way.
Right. I mean, it's a beautiful thing. It's a blessing. Every time we take a breath of air, I mean, we've won the lottery, you know, like to think that my soul has chosen this body, and this body I'm in is capable of doing handstands and running miles and writing amazing papers and inspiring people and traveling and all these and eating and digesting and, you know, all these amazing and healing, you know, we're just so amazing. And we just see like 5 pounds, like there's 5 pounds. And then you see all the other pros that I've just listed. And, you know, we just see these negative things because we're so hardwired to be judgmental of life and of everything.
I want to ask you about that because your tagline for My Kind of Life is inspiration for kind people. And, like, why is kindness hard? Is it not our natural
inspiration? It's so hard. You know, I actually feel inspired to write an article about it because even when I write inspiration for kind people, and maybe this is another form of radical honesty, I still feel like a total jerk sometimes. You know, I'm judgmental. I'm sometimes mean in terms of like the way that I think, but you know, I think we all strive to be kind, or we all want to think of ourselves as kind. So it's really a working project of rewiring the way that our brains have been developed to think, whether it's like, oh, she doesn't look that good, or looking at all the celebrity pictures and saying, oh, like, who's hotter, this girl or, you know. And I just thought, you know, it's time for a change. And I think people want to read this and to see, you know, to be a part of this community that's kind-based, kind-centric, and to start that journey backwards towards the way that we're really meant to be. A tribal, primal, I would say, community. Even if we are global, we do have internet that does connect us, and we are still that primal creature in that way, where, you know, we can work together to build something really amazing instead of constantly playing Jenga, life Jenga, where we're taking blocks out from each other and letting each other's towers fall over, if you will.
Mm. Yeah, and I have to say, I've never thought about this before, but what really inspires me, like, I just did an interview with John Pierre, who's the, mm-hmm. you know, the vegan fitness trainer, and he's an amazing guy, and he's done so many wonderful things, and, you know, he's certainly an inspiration. And I actually find it more inspiring to see people kind to themselves than, like, John Pierre or Dalai Lama. Like, there's something that touches me much more deeply when I see someone admit their own frailty. Like you just said, sometimes I feel like a jerk. Like that,
right.
That just moved something in my chest to, you know, and I can feel like a flush in my face. Like there's an emotion that comes right. up to hear you say that, but not say it in a self-deprecating or a self-blaming way. Like this is what happens. This is my life experience.
Yeah, for sure.
So it seems like, you know, is that kind of, you know, kindness ground zero, is kind to yourself.
For sure, yeah. And really it's all based around, again, radical honesty. It's just it's being human again. You know, we have escaped that idea and relied on other people. And now, you know, we need to get back to who we are. What our mission is here, you know, what makes us tick. And for me, kindness is something that I lacked a lot in my life. I had an amazing upbringing, an amazing family, just a lot of love. But there are moments in my life where I felt that I could have used more kindness. And if I can empower that in, let's say, that 15-year-old girl that I used to be and struggled with body image, and I can be vulnerable and expose that to her or to him, you know, then my journey's worth it. That's why I'm here on Earth. I know that, you know. And so yeah, it starts with kindness. It starts with self-love and empowerment, radical honesty.
And it's funny because I encountered radical honesty maybe a decade ago. It was a book, the title of a book. Mm-hmm. And what I took from that as a, you know, late 30s male was that radical mm-hmm. honesty was telling everybody exactly how you felt about them. And it was kind of the opposite of kindness. So to
right.
hear them,
if you're a jerk.
Yeah, you know, there was an interview that I read in the magazine with the guy who'd written the book. I can't remember his name. But, he,
right.
you know, according to the interview, he was, like, pretty brutal. Like, that was a stupid question.
Yeah.
You know, I feel like you're wasting my time right now. And it's like, okay, great. Well, I know where I stand. But, you know, this conversation has really stitched together the true purpose of radical honesty, which is when, you know, mm-hmm. That just blurting things out doesn't make you any more honest.
No.
You know, that there's a depth of looking that you need.
I think you need the right intention as well. You know, if your intention by blurting it out is to hurt someone, you know, I think that you actually need to look at inside of yourself, even if you are using radical honesty to say how you feel, and let's say you are that guy that's like blurting out really rude things, and maybe it's a learning tool for him to sit back and look at how much of a jerk he is and how he can actually transform himself into a more kind person, a more compassionate person, maybe a listener instead of a talker. Maybe there are things that he needs to work on, and that's his tool to observe what he can improve on.
Yeah, everything. That's another great outlook, that every problem is an opportunity for growth. It's a door
right.
You're invited to step through.
Mm-hmm.
So let's talk about topless yoga. First of all, the name topless yoga sounds a little bit tongue-in-cheek to me. Was that intended to sort of, you know, be both empowering and a little bit naughty?
You know, it was stupidly simple. It's how I like to say it. I wanted to shoot a web TV show with a body empowerment meditation and make it about shedding labels and shedding, like, you know, any idea of who you're supposed to be and just to relax into who you're meant to be. And so the night before I shot the web TV show, I decided I was going to take my shirt off, do it in my sports bra on the beach at sunrise, and if any of my friends wanted to come, they were welcome to join me. And I showed up and 25 people were there cheering me on at like 6 in the morning. It was really an amazing event, but I kind of stupidly called it topless yoga so that my friends would come knowing that we were shooting a video and taking our shirts off. And it just stuck. And it's not necessarily all yoga based. It is one of the vehicles I use, but topless is trademarked as just topless. And it's a double entendre of saying, you know, we're topless, meaning we're shirtless. But also we are topless in being infinite. We have no cap to who we are. And we don't need the shirt or the clothing to make us feel any greater than who we are truly meant to be. So that's where topless came from.
I like it. I think it's, you know, first it gets our attention because we have to start where people are.
What's that?
We have to start where people are.
Right.
So if there are people who are going to pay attention to you because they're going to be titillated, like, ooh, topless
right.
yoga, let me check that out.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
You know, so, you know, I watched the video about the San Francisco event, and, you know, it's beautiful. And there's you know, shots of people doing yoga and mostly your voiceover telling everyone how beautiful they are. At what point do people start believing it, in your experience, as opposed to like, okay, this is the politically correct thing for me to, you know, want to believe? When does it sink in?
I'll give you my experience. So I am learning to play the piano right now, and I just decided I would do this several months ago. And then in the beginning, I totally sucked at it. But now I'm so much better, and I just, like, started playing a blues song the other day, and I'm really grooving and having a great time. And in being topless and really letting it sink in, I was thinking, wow, what a great illustration of my journey through a lot of things in life. But, you know, the first time you take your shirt off and you're in this amazing community of supportive people who are doing the same thing, they're there for different reasons, but really the same idea of being radically honest and shedding labels and just being as you are. That public statement of taking your shirt off, at first you're extremely nervous and you're not sure what is going on, what to expect, if your life will actually change or not, if it's just a crock in a marketing ploy. And throughout the event, you forget about your body. You forget that you were so nervous about your cellulite or your stretch marks or not being strong enough or being soft, too hard, whatever it is. And when you realize that, when you it's basically when you snap out of that meditative state, I think that's when you start to realize, oh, I see what this work is about. I need to do this again. Like, I need to keep practicing. And so even outside of my topless events, I started taking my shirt off in yoga when I started jogging in Miami and in different stages to really get over that fear of my body. And at the same time, which is an amazingly beautiful thing, to empower other people to feel that they're great enough also to do it and to feel amazing, no matter how they look. And and so it's really like piano. It just, I continue to practice and practice and practice, and every time I started believing it more. And that's the best way I can illustrate it.
It reminds me of something a teacher once told me. It's just discerning the distinction between privacy and secrecy. And it feels like topless in a sports bra maintains your privacy, but it does away with the need for secrecy.
Right. Oh, that's good. Yeah, I like that. Yeah, I've had offers to do really topless events from a very well-known hotel that is known for, like, being a little racy. And I was flattered, but I wanted to keep the idea very polished and inclusive to all ages and all sexes, and just be in keeping the idea around body empowerment and not just saying, like, okay, we need to all be naked yoga and you know, like, run around like we're primal creatures again. It's really just about, like, the idea of being there. And you don't need to be naked to shed those labels. I guess you can do it in your home, you know. And I totally, that's fine. You can do that. But even from my experience, just being in my sports bra and taking my shirt off at the size that I'm at, it feels extremely empowering to be amongst my friends who know what I'm doing, who are there to support my journey. And, you know, I'm doing the same thing by giving them the opportunity to do the same, to do the same thing if they would like to. And saying, hey, I'm not going to judge you, because if anyone were to be judged in the room, it would be the girl that's a size 14, you know, and all these yoga girls are size 0. But, Yeah,
so, sorry, I had a question that just slipped my mind for a second. Let me...
No worries.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I know what I was going to ask about. So, you know, you people can do this work. They can do the workshops with you. They can work on it on their own. But the truth is, when especially a woman goes back out into the world, she is going to get all the negative stuff reinforced. You know, I've been sensitized. I am a guy, but I've been sensitized to this by my female friends, by having an 18-year-old daughter, by having a wife. And just by paying attention, that this is a culture and a society that is relentless in its evaluation of women's bodies. How do you help women who, you know, finish the topless class, go out, and then they're catcalled on the street, or they're made to feel not enough, or, you know, I don't know if you've been watching, you know, the stuff with Senator Hillenbrand in New York,
who's
apparently been told about her body by male senators. How do you help people withstand that onslaught and stay true to themselves inside?
That's a great question, because as a model, I'm in, like, the number one media and advertising industry where everything's photoshopped, everything is about image, and yet at the same time, it's almost like black and white. You know, I'm talking about body empowerment and how image is not us. And at the same moment, I am an image. I am a model. So it's a great question, because I've had people ask me how I feel about media and advertising. And I said, you know, I feel like people are very talented in this world. And some people are talented at lighting, and some people are talented at taking photos, and some people are talented at putting ads together, and I respect that, but it doesn't change the way my mind is, because I know what's real and honest. And now I can look at an advertisement and not say, I need to look like Gisele Bündchen and be that thin. I can step back and I can say, that's a beautiful ad. I love the way they put that outfit together. The lighting is great. I love the filter. It looks great, you know, and I can respect it in a kind, positive way instead of saying, like, oh, that's complete crap. They photoshopped her, and it's not real, and she probably gets paid $1 million, like, for a photo shoot. You know, all these negative ideas, and instead stepping back and saying, you know what, I'm going to choose to be positive, because it's not everyone's intention to make me feel upset. You know, like, this is a great thing. I can respect it for what it is and move on, because for me, like, that's not what life is about. And I think if you approach it from that perspective of just being okay with things that don't make you tick, then I think it's a safer way to approach the media and advertising and the peer pressure. You know, if the girls in high school all decide to skip breakfast and lunch every day and not tell their parents about it because they all want to be thin together, you know, you can approach it and say, like, hey, I respect, you know, your idea of what you think is healthy, but, like, for me, you know, I know what health is. I know what the truth is. I know what makes me happy, what fulfills me, what makes me tick.
Yeah, and the truth is, I think is borne out by your experience. The moment you start to feel comfortable in your skin, you start having this crazy disproportionate impact on people.
Yeah, I guess so.
Right? So, you know, you're like trying so hard to make a name for yourself. Tell you relax and just start telling the truth, and all of a sudden, like, sponsors are coming out of the woodwork, and like,
right,
like this, the topless thing is taking off like crazy.
Yeah.
And it's because it represents a resting state. You know, everything in nature wants to get to rest. And when people see, look, Emily is pretty cool about this. She's not tied up enough. Gosh, I want that. I want my own mind to come to rest in a similar place.
Yeah. Yeah, it's definitely a contagious feeling, whether it's me promoting it or if I, you know, I always say that the people that come to my topless events, they leave as empowered people in their communities. And so, you know, I've kind of passed the baton onto them to continue that empowerment on their own level and in their own community. And it's very contagious. You know, once you want to be around those people, you know, that's the person in the room you always want to be around, is the one that doesn't care what you look like and the one that won't judge you and the one that's just there to be compassionate and really talk about real human things, you know?
Right. So, and that's something else, I had a note to maybe ask you, and I wasn't sure whether I wanted to, but this kind of brings it around. So in the vegan community, there's a flurry of debate and discussion right now about specifically female ex-vegans who have said that the veganism was part of their own body dysmorphic disorder. And there's, you know, vegans tend not to like ex-vegans very much. And there's been a, you know, there's a lot of vitriol flying, a lot of hurt, a lot of anger. And, you know, so how do you, as a vegan and an advocate for a kind, compassionate lifestyle, talk to people about that issue without making them feel bad?
Talk to the issue about people, you know, body dysmorphic disorder and veganism, you know?
Well, specifically, like, just in general about, you know, there was a post that came across my Facebook page today basically saying, I'm a vegan. If you're not a vegan, don't ask me to respect your choice to eat meat, because I wouldn't respect your choice to own slaves, to brutally rape and murder people. And I'm like, ooh, that doesn't work for me.
So, as
a vegan, you have a sense of things that are wrong with the world, injustices. So how do you present that with compassion and non-judgment?
Right. Well, you just answered the question. I don't judge anyone else or their journey, because I don't know what their life is like in their earth suit, you know, and it takes so much time to waste on judging someone else's life. And I feel like, you know, I've judged my own life for so long. I'm just ready to live unbridled and to be an example as opposed to be a preacher. And if they choose a healthier lifestyle, maybe not adopt a vegan lifestyle. And I think we can both relate to this on some level. I remember when I met you, you said, like, I'm not necessarily a vegan, but I'm a plant-based eater. And I can agree with that 100%, is that I actually don't call myself a vegan anymore, even though I eat in that way. I don't choose to call to choose any label. I just live, and who knows what will happen tomorrow. I'm a compassionate animal lover. I'm a health and wellness chooser, and if that continues to be what is called vegan or plant-based, then I'll continue on that journey. But, you know, I can't judge anyone. I think judgment's like the worst way to try and to help someone. So, yeah, I can offer them information and books like you've written, and to give them a way to, and for me, becoming a plant-based eater helped me recover from eating disorders, because I could finally connect with the food on my plate and know that it was good for me and know that it was compassionate, and on like many levels, it was just a good way for me to start eating again. But, you know, it's just non-judgment, like you said. You can't judge, and it rubs me the wrong way when people say these crazy things, and they want me to review videos of slaughterhouses and all these crazy things. I'm like, you know, I have some amazing, very proficient, prolific writers that have amazing blogs that will cover this stuff, but I don't. I cover the positive stuff, and it hurts my heart to see the negative stuff going on in the world, and I think I, you know, want my story and my brand to be about the positive side of the journey and the beautiful parts of being kind.
I love that choice. I love the way you talk about it.
Yeah. Well, you do it the same way, you know?
Well, you know, here's another moment of radical honesty for me, is that sometimes I see these and I get so judgmental of the people who are being judgmental.
Right.
And then I have to go, oh, look.
Yeah.
You know, there's nothing like, you know, I mean, one thing I've learned in my many years of introspection and kind of working on my inner mess is that everything that bugs me in the outside world, I can find a giant vat of it inside me.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, like we said, your thing is health and wellness and nutrition, and my thing is body empowerment. And some people's things is animal advocacy, which we have a little bit of that inside of us because that is part of our journey, or, you know, maybe it's just health and wellness based. Some people it's environmental, some, you know, everyone has their own thing. So
And
how can I judge that? Because without that, you know, the earth wouldn't turn.
Well said. So I just occurred, I'm on your Facebook page. And I'm looking at the photo of the San Francisco shoot. Everyone's hands up, smiling in the yoga store. And I can't see exactly, but it looks like there might be two or three men in attendance. And so I want to be careful because, you know, so we're doing a lot of, you're doing a lot of work on empowering women to change the way they think and to look, be more positive about their bodies and their spirits, and yet this is largely a male problem in terms of, men objectifying women, men being rude to women, men playing video games in which, they find hookers and then shoot them. And so what would you, you said you have another project that you're working on. I don't know what it is, but if you could wave your magic wand and reach out to boys, what would you tell them? What do you think we should be doing with boys around how they send messages to girls and women?
I think it's really a matter of parenting, actually. So maybe it's waving the magic wand at parents and just saying, I really think our true instinct is to be nice to each other. And if we could teach parents to just let the kids be exactly the way that, the universe has allowed them to be, that things would kind of heal themselves, And I get the same thing. I know we're talking about body image, but even with veganism, people say, your kid is definitely going to rebel, and they are definitely going to eat a big hamburger in front of you when they're 15. I'm like, if they did, I'm at peace with that. That's okay, because that's their choice, and they're human. My mom would never try and tell me, you can't be doing this because, you can't have a topless nonprofit because the word topless is too racy, and we're from a conservative family. She's super proud at all my accomplishments, and I think that, I don't know if it's like waving a magic wand at boys, because there's no solution to these games of, naked hookers getting shot or whatever you said, and I think it'll exist. As long as the foundation is there, like I said, where you know what's true in your head and your heart, and you're taught that with conviction, and really shown that with conviction, because a lot of parents may say something but not do it. I think things will be okay, and maybe there will always be some negativity in the world, because that's the way we're hardwired, and maybe those people haven't learned yet how to be kind, or maybe they've never experienced love before, and we need to be the ones to show them that way. So I think there's also a responsibility for the people around the boys, or around the girls, or anyone, to say, I'm responsible for empowering the people that I'm with. So it's a bit of like social responsibility.
I hear running through every one of your answers is what feels to me like a very deep faith that there's goodness at heart. Of all the stuff that's going on that would cause us pain is somehow extra, so that doing extra to combat it is sort of adding on to it. Would you say that's true, that there's a way in which the answers to all these intractable problems is actually quite simple?
Yeah, one of the things my husband and I always say is keep it simple, stupid. And it's just being simply stupid. And, I'm not saying that's the answer to everything, but I think when you complicate things, and it just makes it makes it complicated.
Yeah, and then when I look at the problem, my first reaction is, well, we need a program for this, and we need an intervention for that. And I think that was the energy behind asking, what would you do with the boys? And your answer is so simple. People want to be good. They want to be kind. We have to get out of their way.
Right, and we have to empower them to be good and kind, to encourage it and to teach that. I'm sure there's discipline that you need and teaching, right? Because we all are teachers. It's pretty simple. And I don't even have kids.
It comes back to radical honesty. Because when I think back on my life and all the unkind things that I thought and said, specifically around body image, and all the things that I learned from my parents around how people should look and what it means if they don't look that way, Mm-hmm. You know, there's no way that's not living and breathing inside me. And if I don't look it square in the face, it leaks out no matter what my conscious intentions.
Right. And I think even if negativity does come out, you know, which it does, I mean, you know, there are parts of me that even, like, I'll look at myself in the mirror still and I'll be like, oh, if only I didn't have, like, a pimple on my chin or, you know, like, these stupid things. Like, in 50 years, I would be, even, like, tomorrow, I won't even remember that I, you know, had a breakout. But if these, like, little negative thoughts, whether it's, like, judging friends or judging yourself, whatever, they come out, it's okay. Like, you can forgive yourself and just move on because it's the way that life is. You know, it's a balance. It's like a teeter-totter. And you just have to continue to say, okay, is it a big deal? No. Forgive yourself. Move on.
Right. It's almost like when you talk about your body not being personal. It's simply, you know, it's a vehicle and it's gorgeous. I sometimes try to think that about my thoughts. Like, I didn't choose that. I didn't choose that thought. I didn't wake up and make a list of the thoughts I wanted to have. Like, that one, you know, it popped in like a cloud overhead.
Yeah. Anyway. No, Wayne Dyer says the same thing. He says that he doesn't say what he says. He doesn't think what he thinks. The universe puts it in his mind. And he's just the vehicle for this message that just is channeled through him. And I can relate to that. And I think what you just said is completely the same thing. You don't choose to do what you're doing. Your life is pre-written. You know, like you're already hardwired to do exactly what you're doing, and you're listening to it, and you're succeeding that way.
Right. It takes so much of the pressure off that it makes it easier to make generous and compassionate choices.
Yeah, it's true.
So before we close, I'm curious what's up for you. I know the topless events are taking up a lot of your time and energy. You know, becoming a certified yoga teacher. Like, where should we watch the horizon for the bright star that is Emily?
Great question. So I am doing an event where it's rewriting Valentine's Day, and it'll be instead of loving someone else, Valentine's Day will be about self-love. And it's going to be a topless event in 5 or 6 major U.S. cities, which I'll release on my blog, mykindoflife.com, and in several global cities. So we're going worldwide with topless yoga. It's going to be a vehicle through yoga, and it'll be on Valentine's Day, which is a Saturday this year, or in 2015, all at the same time, happening at the same time, and in different time zones. So it's going to be really exciting to see topless yoga interpreted in different languages and what self-love means to different countries, because I've encountered that through my modeling experiences. Self-love in the U.S. might be loving your body, but in the Middle East it might be like taking your burqa off or like feeling like you're beautiful enough to show your ankles or to smile with your teeth showing, and all these different ideas of self-love. And so Valentine's Day is going to be my big day.
Wow.
That's next big event that I'm planning.
That's such a great judo move on Valentine's Day, which is for so many people all about, you know, what's my sexy report card?
Right. Yeah, exactly.
You know, you get to grade yourself.
Yeah, exactly.
And, I love that. Is there a way for folks to get involved if they're hearing this and they say, hey, I'd like to participate or sponsor or join up?
What was the question again?
Is there a way for folks who are inspired by this to get involved in some way, you know, to sponsor an event? Or how should people who want to move this forward, what's the next step they should take?
Well, I'm hiring 3 volunteers for each city. And I'm going to announce the cities on My Kind of Life, so pay attention to when we announce, and it'll also be on my social media. And if anyone would like to sponsor the event or work with me, which I'm working with Lululemon already and Kind Snacks and several other events, and I've had inquiries on the Today Show. It might be in Manhattan on the Today Show, which is so exciting. you can always email me. My email is public information. It's emily@mykindoflife.com. And feel free to email me. I answer my own emails. So I would love to have your support. And whether you want to just spread the word on social media or volunteer on a larger level, that would be amazing. And if you're a photographer, a videographer, media that wants to donate your time towards promoting the event, I would greatly appreciate it. You can reach out to me also.
Awesome.
Thank you.
I hope a lot of people listening to this will be so moved. I'd love to see one event in every state and every country in the world.
Yeah, I have a long list of cities. So we're in the process of elimination right now in the focus group, and we're trying very hard. We're going to make a video for the people that can't make it to the event so that they can do it from home as well.
Wow, because, you know, I'm thinking, again, everything that I'm trying to do in the world is really predicated on the foundation of people loving themselves, being compassionate with themselves, and seeing a oneness, as opposed to seeing everything as, you know, if we're all separate, then we're all in competition to some extent.
Right.
You know, then the man or the woman that I'm sitting next to on the bus is somehow, you know, in competition for a mate or for resources. And,
right.
You know, so the work you do is utterly essential for the work that I do. So I honor you for it, and I'm so grateful. Mm-hmm. And I turned my daughter on to your work because I know that's really, really, it's really, really important for her to hear it. And she can only hear so much from her, you know, middle-aged white dad about justice.
No, father figures are great.
Yep. I'm doing what I can, but it's great to have allies like you.
Oh, thank you. And the same, I honor everything that you've done because you started my journey into plant-based lifestyle and opened my eyes to kindness. So I respectfully honor you as well.
Oh, I'm taking that in like a hot toddy. I'm not even sure what that is, but it sounds good.
A hot toddy, of course.
Yeah. So, Emily Nolan, thank you so much for taking the time.
I feel
so jazzed and empowered and full of love for you and the work you do and for the whole world of all these souls looking for love and hopefully with your guidance starting to find it in all the right places.
Thank you so much for having me.
A pleasure. Take care. Be well.
Bye.
Bye.
Let's take this home with some gratitudes. First of all, thanks to Mama Earth. You have been so very, very good to me. Second, Will Ridenour donated the use of his beautiful song Savali Dawn as the theme music for the show. You can find out more about Will's music at willridenour.com. Third, thanks to all the patrons of the Plant Yourself podcast for your financial support. You can read the names of all the patrons at any show notes at plantyourself.com. If you would like to become a patron to show your gratitude for the work I'm doing and help support it, you can do so at plantyourself.com/gift. That's G-I-F-T, all lowercase. And finally, I want to thank you, the listener, for making all of this possible, for giving me a reason to reach out to people, to have conversations, to edit, produce, publicize. All the stuff that I do is for you so that we can continue to have conversations and continue to ripple out healing and transformation into the world.